So you're Annie leading and in, Kyle right? Provides. Are you leading?
No.
What is
this is a really fun one because this is episode 222 and 222 bonus, The State of Music 2022. Hosted by you.
Nice. I mean, well, luckily I'm wearing the suit today, you know, so it works. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I am Dan.
And this is episode 222, pushing two, on this fine, yes, dos acero, but we don't do Mexican soccer on this podcast. That's for another fine folks that we made it, so they can have fun talking about that. But anyways, on this fine established podcast about music, we got three albums that we're going to review this week. We have Multitude by Stormae, we have What It Means to Be Keen by Keen Vaughn, and then we have Refresh by Chanel Tress, or Channel Tress, because, you know, it's fun to make fun of people's names every once in a while, because everybody calls me Scene, so we'll allow it here. Also, we got some singles and other things as well, and
A light smattering of news. I usually wait for a little bit later for promos, but I'll do two promos at the top. First of all, what Sean really said really early on, we haven't done a plug for We Made It podcast in a while, but it's the soccer podcast that the boys from Power Report, Bam and Caesar do. Sean was on there like episode two out of 249.
They just made fun of me the whole time, but one day I want to go back on there. When's the World Cup? We got to do World Cup specials there or something.
I'm super down to do a We Made It podcast, like super stream, but Power Report style, but just like all of the Qatar World Cup on Thanksgiving.
So that way, like when it's like England match and Germany match and all that, we're all watching together. I'd be down.
Check out We Made It podcast wherever you get podcasts. They do great work over there covering global soccer in all parts of the world from a really good perspective, the kind of perspective that is smart and the kind you expect from Audio Face or Power Report. So definitely check them out. And secondly, back to Audio Face music related things, the State of Music conversation that Sean and I have done 5 years running. Actually, maybe four, because we didn't do one in 2017, or maybe the podcast was a little more meandering back then, so perhaps we accidentally did it.
I feel like we did do one, but we didn't call it State of the Music Industry. It's a conversation that we had.
But yeah, we, and a lot of people have been asking about this, to talk about the music industry, less from an album's context, but more of like a, what does the business look like? For some people, it's actually dry, but I think it's what leads a lot of what happens in music. Plus, we talk about how the genres sound themselves, and I think that part's really fun, because it's so hard to do. We do it in little bits and pieces on Audio Face. It's a really good focus conversation.
It's us being the majority report, but on music.
Yes. And for Syndicate 23 members, you're going to be getting that early. Next week, we're going to be doing a like break week episode just for like my schedule and our brain reasons. But and also Sean's schedule. We're both busy as hell. But like, Syndicate 23 members will get that episode early, and then that'll be a bonus drop for regular Audio Face people. You will also get that special bonus episode as well, because that's just been tradition. Anyways. I am ready to, well, as ready as I'll ever be, to go into the singles right now. And the first one, actually, I won't give it credit, because this is Bam Bam by Camila Cabello featuring Ed Sheeran. And this thankfully goes more towards to a Camila, like, sort of angle.
Camila Cabello, she's a pretty, pretty big pop star and whatnot, and her music, I actually don't mind her music that much, and with that, you know, we like to shit on Ed Sheeran as much as we can here, because his music has been utter garbage the past 6-7 years.
And six times on Sundays.
And eight times on Sundays. I actually like the track. Has a lot of Latin flair to it, for it. And Ed Sheeran's part on it is he actually complements the track pretty well, which is, you know, rare for me to say that he actually did it good for once, but I thought it was a decent track. So
yeah, a track where Ed Sheeran isn't memorable is a good track, in my opinion. I think it's mostly just sort of led by that general production, and it sounds pretty good. Next up, we have Last Call by Khaled, who we talked about his album last year, Scenic Drive, the tape, sort of like a drop kind of thing, as being a proper, like, return to form for Khaled after kind of a lackluster couple of projects before that. And this is also a really solid track, I'd say.
Is worth it. I'm guessing I will go find out in the end. You show me purpose and give me a patience that I've never met.
Yeah, I think it's still his route of return to form. I think Zay, it's a decent track. I think he's been stepping in the right direction after what we thought was lackluster in 2019. His album last year was very good. I still want him to branch out a little bit more. Because his vocals are very good. The people he chooses to put on production are starting to get better and better, but I still want him to branch out a little bit more and do a little bit different things and experiment a little bit, because I think that would really up him to the next level. Because now we've heard him, like, his general pop flair and whatnot, and he's really mastered that down. You can tell even by the single that he's mastered that sound. Now let's see what he can do when he has, you know, different styles of sounds and whatnot, and has a little bit more to prove in that regard. But he's still, it's still a good track.
Yeah, and production-wise, it's decently upbeat, has a poppy sort of flair to it. I am really chill with this, but I also agree with you. I want to get Khaled to push a little bit forward, as we'll see artists do a little bit more here. We got quite a rundown here. But moving on, we have Skeleton Carrière by Pop Tart. I just really want to check in on Pop Can really fast, because I heard him with that Gorillaz track, and I think we reviewed an album of his in like 2017, and then kind of just like haven't heard from him since. Yeah. But yeah, he's still Jamaican it up. Jamaican the music. No, and it sounds... It's sort of like a more slower trap thing in most of it, but it's overall, I think, like, still carries a dancey sort of blend to it, and... Yeah, as we'll be doing more on this podcast, episode specifically, and more as we try to, just dipping into international sounding music just to see like what the variety is out there. Because I think it is very easy to listen to all of the music that's pushed in mainstream in America and go, oh, this all sounds the same. It's all kind of bland. But if you push out, you can hear what sounds the same in other countries or what sounds unique in other countries.
Oh, yeah. There's actually conversations I really want to have. And I'm not going to talk about that today, staying in the music industry. Of like artists like Bad Bunny and a couple others that I do want to talk about, but more on that later. I think Skeleton Cartier is a decent track. I mean, it's definitely that, you know, Latin trap, as I like to say. So it's decent.
Yes, and then lastly, we have Neighborhood Superstar by DaBaby and YoungBoy Never Broke Again. The duo y'all been waiting for, and so they actually released a full double project together called The Uncancelables. I'm kidding. And no, it's actually called Better Than You. I'm not kidding. And it's a dual project. I think, listen, if I try to do my best separate the art from the artist impression here, which is a statement like we hate on Audio Face, but sure. I think pairing DaBaby and YoungBoy NBA, who both have this like fast-paced lyrical southern like style to them, could be good, because I think DaBaby at his strongest and YoungBoy NBA at his strongest are formidable rappers. I left my bitch and got some new. Left her too, bitch, I'm a hound. Ready to bite me a nigga. I'm a dog. I really don't like the little nigga, baby. Ooh, he an icing a nigga. I'm in this bitch with that stick popping shit. I'ma pull that bitch out before I bite me a nigga. I'm on vacation, I can't get that being said, we listened to the lead single off of it, and it's sort of like a meh song to me.
It's meh. It's okay. It's
what. If you've heard DaBaby's one simple trick of, you know, like rapping like very, very quickly under like one thing, and then YoungBoy's like usual you know, like rapping the way an ape walks kind of tone of just like yelling into the mic and being like angry about it, then like you've heard all these tracks most likely. I think that they should challenge themselves to branch out because there is some talent there from what I can see, but it's so inconsistent from what I've seen from both DaBaby and Youngboy NBA. But of course, this is Trap in 2022 on Audioface, so we have to give it the ranking system, which is kind of interesting because we had a philosophical debate about this. Can YB be better or worse than YB? Technically, this is YB and DaBaby. So is YB better or worse? Is YB and DaBaby better or worse than YB?
I think YB DaBaby is better than YB just because YB by himself is really boring and bland. And this track was boring, but not bland.
Fair. Balance and unafraid.
A fair balance and unafraid. This is Shepard Smith, and you have a great evening.
He's not even on Fox News anymore. That's a damn shame.
Right? Those are the days.
Anyways.
Brett Hume.
Become a Syndicate 23 member to financially compensate more of this nonsense. For just $5 a month, you can get bonus episodes early. You also get special episodes from PowerPort, other things that are only for members. I am about to wrap up the Dan from the Internet video I've been working on for a while, and that's going to premiere for members early and first, so you don't want to miss that out. Go to join.syndicate23.co for all the info. Check out our 2022 playlist and help us name the fucker by clicking on the podcast, by clicking on the description in the video description or the podcast description, wherever you are listening or watching. And thank you, Peter, at Dead Music Productions for mixing and mastering. I need to stop interchanging the two because they're different and all my music friends keep telling me this. Mastering the episode. Technically, yes. I'm mixing it, but for mastering this episode.
He mastered.
And yes, and making it sound nice, and for putting up for all the ridiculous scheduling that we do and all the ridiculous amount of content that we're putting out. But thank you, Peter. And if you are a musician who wants to get your music mastered, check out Dead Music Productions at deadmusic666 on Insta. And if you're a musician who wants to get your single in our attention on Audioface, go to audioface@syndicate23.co for that. But we must begin now with the news. And I just wanted to bring on a really quick block here. It's not even like a full news story, but of course the biggest news story in the world right now is the ongoing conflict between Ukraine and Russia. No one's having a smart, the average person doesn't really have a smart opinion about it. We're not going to pretend to have smart opinions about it. That's what Power Report's for. Yep. But on Audioface, we'll mostly talk about how it's affecting the music industry. And because of sanctions, economic restrictions that have been put on the economic restrictions have been put on Russia by the majority of the world, more or less, with the exception of China and North Korea at this point. It basically restricts all of the streaming companies from operating in any way in Russia because all of these streaming companies are trading money, like money is exchanging hands in some way.
Yeah.
And so you're hearing stories of like Russian streamers, Russian content creators, Russian musicians, etc., who are like regular Russian citizens who some may have a good view of Vladimir Putin. A lot of them don't. They're just kind of locked out of the banking system, at least temporarily, while all this stuff takes place. Now, there's some news that some of the major banks in Ukraine are now starting to ally with UnionPay, which is a system that competes with SWIFT, the international like banking system that China runs. And so that could make it so those payments work again. But then that would be on Spotify and all these other companies to then say, okay, we're going to allow this loophole around the sanctions to work and function. Because I mean, Spotify, for example, is a Northern European company. This is a little bit close to home for them. But it's also Apple Music, a lot of American companies who control this as well. Google is obviously a large one with YouTube Music. It's often forgotten, but a lot of people listen to music on YouTube. And so this is continuing to happen, you know, as it develops. We'll see how it affects the music industry. Obviously, we don't talk a lot about Russian music specifically on the podcast, but there are definitely Russian musicians who are being affected by these sanctions and by everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. And speak nothing about Ukrainian musicians as well. And we'll continue just like touching on the story because it's interesting kind of as it relates to music. Although, you know, I think for the everyday average like music consumer, there's nothing from this war yet that is going to affect anything. Not even like, you know, during COVID, there's an issue with like making vinyl in getting those albums released. It's not like Russia makes a lot of vinyl or anything like that, which seems sort of glib to talk about in this way, but hopefully that's like the full picture here.
Yeah, it gets you an idea of it.
Yeah, yeah. If you're like, oh, Dan, there's like Ukrainians dying or there's Russians dying, and Azov Battalion, blah, blah, Congress, leftist, blah, blah, whatever, power report, go watch that on there, youtube.com/DanFromTheInternet. This is the music podcast. Leave me alone. But anyone else who disagrees with what I just said, please at SW Suarez on Twitter. Now,
I'm down.
Also, Kanye did a number of things this week. I honestly don't care. Maybe one of them involved Pete Davidson's head in effigy. I don't know. Guy's kind of obsessed with Pete Davidson. Kind of homo. Anyways, I'm gonna. The only thing I'm gonna acknowledge is that Kanye. I'm allowed, but Kanye West was apparently caught in the studio with Beach House. The only reason I'll give this story the light of day because we've talked about Ye's only talent right now being production.
Yeah,
and if he produces with other artists, it can help to pare down some of Ye's ridiculousness compared to, you know, Beach House, any other artists like Kid Cudi. You have that whole run of you know, manic albums that Ye made from a couple years back. So it could be really interesting to see kind of like a, and this was also spotted in the, I forget, oh yeah, this was on Instagram, but it would be very interesting to see, you know, maybe if even if it's like a one-off of these, of Beach House and Ye working together, because I think that'd be a good thing. I want to see more rap and indie and alternative mixed together. There's some artists who do it, but that's such like a...
Like, I love it when big artists from other genres partner with indie, because you might get some great stuff. Like, example, my favorite is Thomas Bernhardtner of Daft Punk partnering up and producing Phoenix's last album and doing stuff along with them for a long time. And it gets you new ideas, gets you new things. And if Kanye can do that with Beach House, you know, more of the power to him. Let's see what happens. It's a very interesting combination, but I'd love to see what comes out of that.
Yeah, or even...
even though fuck Kanye and God, why not?
Yeah. Now, for the top music story of the week, before we get into album reviews, this is things that make you go, hmm. So, Bandcamp was bought by Epic Games. Epic Games, you might know as the owners of everything. Fortnite, Gears of War, the Unreal Tournament, the Unreal Engine, which powers hundreds of games. But yeah, the company behind that, Epic Games, announced that they are going to be buying Bandcamp. And so you can have a number of different reactions to these things, but the CEO and co-founder of Bandcamp, Ethan Diamond, posted a note to the blog where he assured people that, I'm not even going to go through the drivel because there's nothing like of note, but when these kinds of things happen in corporate America, there's always a certain strategy. There's not going to be any big changes to begin with. Everything's going to continue going as usual because the company that's acquiring, company A that's acquiring company B, likes what company B is doing and thinks it's good, so we're going to continue doing that. All company B is going to do is leverage bigger company A's scale and power and resources to be able to do what company B is already doing better. Basically saying that Epic Games is really big, and while Bandcamp has a lot of the dynamics around getting artists paid and promoting new work better, there are obviously ways that they think they could improve on the tech side, on the business side, and that's where they're going to employ some of the people, or like use some of the resources that Epic Games, the creators of Fortnite, the one of the most profitable games of all time, is planning of doing. And so a lot of people have had weird thoughts about this, generally because consolidation in the economy in general, let alone in music, is usually a bad thing for artists. It usually means there's less money to go around. Yep. It also means that people get laid off because the word redundancies is usually a thing. And people go, oh, well, why do we have this team doing the same thing that this team is doing? Let's just keep one. And the company A is going to go, well, we're keeping our people, so company B, go. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens because it's interesting because, you know, Epic Games is, you know, video game production going into, you know, music production. So it'll be interesting to see how that has an effect on it, because, you know, music and video games do go hand in hand. I think it's something that is very overlooked in a lot of ways. There's a lot of very important, you know, video game soundtracks and other things, and even just sound effects and whatnot that, you know, become synonymous with video games that, you know, have to do with music. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this. I think Epic Games are probably doing this as a way to be able to license their own music in a way for certain games, and, you know, try to get around of fees and other things that you have to do for music and whatnot. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the future, in the future of Bandcamp.
I'd love to see Fortnite just have a bunch more like indie music, like you're trying to capture some whatever the fuck, and then you hear Animal Collective.
You hear Prester John in the background. You're like, what? But I mean, look, like Travis Scott was in Fortnite, and Kanye was in
Martin
Fortnite,
Luther King was in Fortnite.
Oh, Lord Jesus. So there's like, there's going to be interesting parallels to see what happens within that, but we'll keep you up to date to what happens.
Yeah, definitely. We will. I mean, we have been right about a lot of platforms, with a lot of what Spotify's doing. We've tracked everything from the stuff they say they're doing for artists to what they're actually not doing for artists. Tidal's still kind of like treading water. They have billionaire money. They even got more money from Jack Dorsey. So they have some ways to go. We're wrong about SoundCloud, but we will definitely...
That's the only one we're really wrong with SoundCloud, yeah.
We'll definitely keep you updated for what these things happen, because these platforms are the way we interface with music, and so the way they act is important. And even though the platforms aren't necessarily reacting in response to Bandcamp, the music world loves Bandcamp. Fans love Bandcamp.
Yeah.
And that's an important thing, important currency in the music world and the streaming world. And hopefully 100%. Epic Games doesn't ruin it. I think that's what everyone's hoping, is for Epic Games to not ruin it. But let us know what you think in the comments if you're watching this.
First music review of the day. We have Multitude by Stromae. It is 12 songs, 35 minutes long, almost 36 minutes long. Stromae is a Belgian musician. You know, has done Belgian Dan.
Hi, Ben.
Has done quite a bit of music and is pretty popular in Europe, I would say. Like, he's have multiple tracks and stuff that have been on FIFA tracks and other things. So he's been around for about the past decade, I would say.
His original album in 2013 was incredibly influential in European music, and a lot of people liked it for, you know, I'm only using this like reference because it's like easy for people to jump onto, but in much the same way that Kanye West himself purports to be a musical influence and having his music sort of impact a lot of artists for like mixing genres and doing other things, I think Stromae, in a much less, you know, like making it about himself kind of manner, can also similarly be compared to this, right? Where he created an album in 2013 that was very influential and very genre blendy in a number of different ways that for the coming decade or so, you got a bunch of different artists sort of like being inspired by the sound, like mimicking the sound. Like, it's sort of like a Jaipal.
It's
story
like Jaipal, almost. I was going to say. It's very similar to Jaipal, because actually Jaipal was around the same time when Stromae came out. So you had... And, you know, Jaipal's Indian English. So you had a lot of influences in European music from both of them at the around the same time. So you got, like, that, you know, hip-hop influence along with mixing electronic beats, mixing, like, almost Afro beats and other things and stuff, too. But anyways, going on into the album review, I don't speak French because I'm German, and, you know, we don't do that there.
I don't speak French because... I also say that I don't speak French because I'm Madagascan and my family left before they came. So, that caveat being said, I'll say that this is... We've been doing this occasionally. We've been doing this occasionally here and there. I mean, we went there world history-wise, but we've been doing this occasionally where we have kind of ghost reviews where I filter in commentary that some of the friends of Audioface, who have been referenced and also been on the podcast from time to time, give me some notes so we can like help give you a good review, along with what we listen to as like regular viewers, so like regular listeners. So like we have both those kind of perspectives there. But I mean, as you go into this album, when we're going to butcher all the names in it, because
I'm just going to say track one, track two, track three. That's
great
for me to do this.
I am going to butcher the names. I'm sorry, everyone in France. I'm screwing up my cred for when I eventually go to France. But yeah, you go into the project, and one thing you will get to experience, as I'll let you off to kind of lead on with Sean, is that you get, even though like we are English reviewers and we speak English and reviewing albums, experimentation and genre blending is like it transcends all of that. And you can tell that every single song on here is like thoughtfully produced and crafted to be a call and homage to a different like international genre.
Yeah, for sure. Like you can hear all the influences and stuff that are in here. Like you can hear all a lot of the dance hall, the you know, European house mixes and stuff that influenced this work, along with a lot of hip hop, a lot of even trap and neo pop, soul, and a couple other genres that are kind of thrown into here too. So the opening track is a good like opener to get you sucked into the record of what it's going to be. And if you don't know that like sound and whatnot of Stromae and a few others, like you'll get a sense of it where, you know, it's a lot of play on, like almost a spoken word or like a singing rap, which is in a lot of it, but then really solid, like easy to listen to production in it, which then, you know, translates throughout the entire record. So second track is like that really fun.
Sante.
Like, yeah, appelle-moi ton responsable et fais vite, elle pourrait se finir comme ça, ta carrière. Oui, célébrons ceux qui ne célèbrent pas. Encore une fois, j'aimerais lever mon verre à ceux qui n'en ont pas. À ceux qui n'en ont pas. À ceux qui n'en ont pas. I really like it, but it's like that. Very, very typical European thing that, you know, who really pioneered for a lot of listeners. And it's good. It's like that Mediterranean feel of like, you know, mixing EDM with hip hop and stuff. And it's something that you hear a lot, but I do enjoy it.
Yeah. I liked La Solicitude, I think that was what it was called, because I remember it being said in the song, but song three. Track three. Sean is entirely giving up on me.
Est-ce que tu me trouveras encore attirant? Le problème, c'est la routine. Quand les jours se ressemblent, ce qui me tue, c'est l'ennui. Est-ce qu'on finira ensemble? Le célibat me fait souffrir de solitude. La vie de couple me fait souffrir de lassitude. Le célibat me fait souffrir de solitude. La vie de couple me fait souffrir de lassitude.
That you get an entirely different thing. That's a little bit bassier, kind of like chimey. It's like almost playing with those sorts of like percussion based instruments to make those like nice noises. And what you get is sort of like something that calls to kind of the calmer parts of electronic music. I guess recently we reviewed the Jordan Rakai type of track or things like that. It's just like really mellow in that way, but still just really beautiful in the way it's sort of illustrating things.
Yeah. Skipping on to track four is good, but my favorite by far is five. I think it's Ninfa.
Parfois que c'est la seule manière de les faire taire. Ces pensées qui me font vivre un enfer. Ces pensées qui me font vivre un enfer.
Where it's like
the drop.
Yeah, it's a really nice drop. It's, you know, mixing dance hall along with like, I don't even know how to explain it, but it's a damn good track. I love the drop. I love the glitchy effects in there. I like the drums. I like a lot of it there in there. It's good. It's very, very
good. Definitely mixing dance hall with like big house EDM from the 2013s, because the song construction is the kind of thing we would complain as being hypey typey, but it's not.
But it's not. It's why? That fine line. It's that fine line, and it changes up that little bit. So
I wouldn't even say it's a fine line, because there's so much experimentation, it doesn't feel that way. Like,
yeah.
It fits in a pop construction because we are seasoned music reviewers, but it's actually, you're doing so many thoughtful things with the construction that it just flows like a song, as it should be, because too many DJs get caught up in the fake construction.
Yeah, and the big thing that I like about it is the vocals. The vocals are very, very good. I love his voice and the way it's, you know, a really nice baritone, like a deep baritone, almost a bass, that in between range. And you get that within that track, and it really, like, tops it off and makes it sound very unique in that way. So and that's something that you get throughout the whole record, too.
And most interesting, because Sean and I very clearly do not speak French. Each of the songs, as much as it's dealing with different genres, it's also dealing with different aspects of the human condition. So we talked about Sante earlier. It's actually a Marxist as fuck song. It has to deal with, like, boundaries between class laborers and lower class laborers and the struggles they go through. L'Enfer is actually a song about suicidality, which I totally didn't get from being French, but I also like that aspect of, like, you can make a really hype song about something that's also, like, really, like, deep and intense as well.
Super deep, yeah.
We'll get to some songs later, like, on, like, Declaration. Declaration is a song about toxic masculinity and, like, struggles with fame, sort of like in a way The Weeknd would do it, or like Drake did in Take Care, right? Like, it's a really interesting way that these themes as well, that, like, obviously it's like music reviewers, we're just taking in, like, oh, this sounds really nice. But we're within actually constructing the language. There's actually some really good themes here as well that I think highlight how each of these songs are vignettes that transcends so many different genres of music, but it still works together in an album, which is what we're usually looking for.
Yeah. Even, like, throughout the whole record, like, you have Rie, which is the eighth track, and hearing that, I really like the vocals, the production of it, and throughout the whole record, I really want to look up the lyrics for a lot of these tracks, too, to understand them a little bit more. But I really like the production in it. I think it's unique in the way it's made. It, you know, has a bunch of influences from all these other different genres, puts it in. And the big thing is, for someone really, you know, for Stromae, who was making music for, you know, over a decade and has really pioneered a lot of songs, he's still pushing, he's still making, you know, doing things that, oh, I haven't heard that example, you know. And in fact, like, hearing that, I'm like, oh, I haven't heard something like that or stuff close to it, but not that it pushes the boundaries more. So I like it. It's a very good record.
Yeah. One note that Kyle had, who was also ghost reviewing these, a lot of the notes, especially on transcribing French, are from Annie. So shout out to Annie. But Kyle said that some of the sounds and motifs potentially could have been developed more. And you're getting a 36 minute album with 12 songs. So you're getting songs that I think are largely full. You get songs that are largely 3 minutes long,
short.
Almost all of them.
Yeah.
But they're short in construction. I think that could be a response to just larger music trends we talk about in the state of music 2022, as we get too soon. But I think I felt like I have just enough in these tracks to explore them. I would have loved a 3 or maybe a 4 minute track here or there. But because of that, much like what I think is actually one of the things that Vince Staples' self-titled album didn't get enough credit for, because it's so short and because it's quite good, it gives it more replay value. It's kind of a streaming trick where, like, you will listen to it more because it only gives you just enough, so that'll help it boost in the algorithm a lot. But I think, as an art-wise, I like that I'm given just enough to want to listen to the song again. I don't feel like the song itself in one or two listens is complete. Like, my brain has gotten that full experience of dissecting all of the sounds. I feel like I love listening to songs on repeat, and so if I get to listen to songs like L'Enfer and dissect every single bit and piece and where they glitch out and how it pans into one side versus the other, then cool. I like listening to tracks. Like, I will probably have Sick by Earl Sweatshirt be my most listened to song, because I've listened to it like 200 times so far this year. I don't mind doing that.
Yeah. But I think it's very good for what it was, and it's, you know, considering, you know, it was, what, 9 years since, or actually more, yeah, about 9 years since his last record. It's good. Mm-hmm. Very, very good.
Arbitrary scale this week, because our review is our review. And we do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face, because we'll give you a ranking system, because Pitchfork will, even though ours is better, because it changes every week. This week it's Pet Federations, in honor of the fact that the European Cat Federation, was it? Decided to pull their competition out of Russia due to the ongoing conflict and everyone pulling the things out of Russia. I don't know. It's
like, they banned Russian cats.
The idea that pet federations are, like, first of all, what is the cat juicing? Second of all, the idea that they banned pet federations is awesome.
Beautiful. It's like, they don't make them like this anymore.
Yeah. What type of pet federation would you give this? I'd give this, it needs to be like a Belgium, or like a pet I think of as very French, like a ferret, maybe a gerbil.
Gerbil federation.
Dare I say frog?
He's Belgian, so. He's French, sure, but I ain't gonna give him no frog. He speaks Flemish, so I'll give him a pass.
Yeah.
Shit, I don't know. That's a good question. This is a solid poodle, but without the French cut federation. So the standardized poodle federation. With no, but you're automatically disqualified from the federation if you have that stupid haircut.
Yeah. Also, I did want to shout out, because Annie did mention it, the trap beat and Bonne Journée, the 12th song, the last song, is very good. I was loving the, like, EDM trappish beat from Landfair. We were like starstruck by that, honestly. But yeah, you get to the rest of the album, and it's really sick. So much replay quality there, and I really appreciate that.
Oh God, why'd you put the story in here?
You know why.
Benny Pepino, of the Benny Pepino Wire Daily Show, you know who it is, during Joe Biden's Handsy Uncle Joe's State of the Union speech. Called him the Kurt Cobain of politics. Said,
Joe Biden. You have to do the voice. You have to do mandatory Seneca 23 rule. You have to do it in the voice. Hold on. You have to make sure to look down like this.
I know exactly.
Eyebrows.
Joe Biden is the Kurt Cobain of politics. He put a shotgun in the mouth of America body politic, and then he pulled the trigger, and the brains are on the wall. Look here. The brains are on the wall.
First of all,
label as anti-Semitic, but I don't give a fuck.
First of all, yeah, I will let Sam Cedar do all of those remarks, but
the Pope with saying, the Jews.
Wait, if Joe Biden is the Kurt Cobain of politics, and he put a shotgun in his mouth and pulled the trigger, then isn't that Love. Saying? Yeah.
is Kamala Harris Courtney Love? Is
First of all, absolutely. Like, no contest. You think it's Pelosi? And second,
old hag.
Nancy Pelosi is Yoko Ono.
And Joe Manchin's fucking John Lennon.
Joe Manchin's Ringo. I stand by it.
I can actually see that.
Anyways, to me, the analogy just doesn't make sense. Let's take out the Courtney Love stuff for a moment. Let's take out the fact that Ben Shapiro just doesn't understand music for a moment.
What do you mean he's the most popular?
If Ben Shapiro is trying to make the criticism that Joe Biden is shooting America, then that's not a suicidal point. Either Joe Biden is America, or America is shooting itself. Which, okay, that might be a point of agreement Ben Shapiro and I would have. My point still stands. I refuse to debate Ben Shapiro because debating people like Ben Shapiro is pointless. I made a video about it 4 years ago that puts the entire idea to bed. And now every YouTube streamer and commentator is now regurgitating that information as though it's fresh news in 2022 because they're slow as shit and they don't pay attention to me. What I will say is that the one thing I will debate Ben Shapiro on is whether rap is music or not. And that's a serious thing. 100%. We'll have one out of your face for that.
We will fucking both do that, goddammit. I'll debate him on that.
Very easy. That's the only topic I'll debate him on. It's the only topic worth my time to debate him on.
Oh, Lord, that's my first and last Ben Shapiro impression I'm ever doing. Second album review of the week, the day. What It Means to Be Keen by Keen Vaughn. 19 songs, 48 minutes long. 49 minutes long. Let's give it that. Extra 9 seconds. Keen Vaughn, you know, have we reviewed Keen Vaughn? I'm pretty sure we've reviewed.
King Vaughn, it's an interesting story because King Vaughn's first project essentially, I want to say Welcome to O'Block was the song that came out in 2020, was the album that came out in 2020. You had some mixtapes out before then, Grandson Volume 1, LaVon James, but Welcome to O'Block came out, and then you had, like, a week later after that album dropped, King Von was shot and killed.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, like, you had this whole thing where one of King Von's partners, like Lil Durk, was started to blow up because he was well, like, affiliated with King Von. That was a lot of attention being on there. The sad slash honest part of the music industry is that if someone dies on your label, that's great attention for your label.
It's great attention, and it pushes those numbers up.
Yeah, and Lil Durk, who will probably be reviewing an album of later this year, then had track
was 2020. On... I thought that was, I kept thinking that was last year.
He has a track on Pooh Shiesty's record that became one of the lead singles for Pooh Shiesty, and then that's how they blew up, and then the rest is history from
that's
there.
That's right.
And so, you know, King Von has this really interesting, you know, career cut short kind of story here, but it's a story that we've done too many times on Audio Face, very
Poshmas Records,
two reasons. Yes, Poshmas Records, because not only is it sad when these artists die too soon before we could really see their raw potential from their alive person, but the music industry also does this shameless cash grab where they take all of the demos and recordings from this artist that were unfinished and not properly done. They try to get all the people together in a room like 5 minutes after the funeral, before the wake and before the meal's even out for the wake. And they're like, can y'all mix this record real quick? And so what it means to be King is just that. It's another hacked together posthumous record that puts King Von's worst foot forward posthumously, just like another so many other posthumous records have done. Sucks.
Yeah, it's not good. It's thrown together in a way that is disrespectful. Like, that's why, like, I paused for a second and I was like, I don't know how to explain this, but I felt like it's disrespectful to him in the way to call it a King Von album, honestly, because it's not.
Yeah, pull out the suspenders for that one. Get real serious.
Yeah, right. Because the way the production is, like, if you go back to, you know, the first mixtapes and everything, and Welcome to O'Block, Grandson Volume 1, and some other things, like, you can tell the production is a bit different than what it means to be King. Like, it's a bit more trendy in the way it is, because granted, it's, you know, three, four years removed. But it's still hitting the beat. It's, you know, this flow's good. You have, you know, things that make you more engaged into it. This just feels like what it means to be King just feels cheap, thrown together, just sporadic little bars here and there, but nothing at all that's going to really hold you into the record. And it just feels so disingenuous for what it is. Wouldn't know better, right?
This is one of those cases where... I hate to say it, but the producer really let the whole thing down.
Oh, 100%.
Like, he has King Von has, like, the same producer who was working on his old albums worked on this one. And I'm trying to get his name up here, Chop Squad DJ. And he's on most of the tracks. It just doesn't hold up the way it needs to, which is why, no wonder, the only song I liked on here was the lead single Don't Play That, produced by Kid Hazel.
I wash my hand with the Ajax. I don't pay that.
What?
I don't pay that. I don't pay that. I don't pay that. Hold on.
She caught me fucking a friend.
21.
I hit that bitch with the peace sign. Why you keep calling me twin?
Pussy.
You know that you pussy, you feline.
Pussy.
She fell in love with a stepper.
21.
I caught her playing with my J.
Oh God.
I fell in love with the gun smoke. She caught me
Chomp Squad DJ didn't touch that shit. Because at bare minimum, if you're going to have
21, I believe, right?
Yes. Yeah. At bare minimum, track four. At bare minimum, if you're going to have a posthumous release, that shit production-wise better be banging. Like, lyrics removed, it has to be banging, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, this homie's dead. Like,
you've got nothing left.
I now need to once again get out of the music thing and just go out of a basic respect your friend. Don't put your friend's beats that he can't rap over or edit over. Don't put him over don't put him over bad beats. All right? Because then, no matter how good King Von's raps are, and unfortunately they aren't that great either, it's even worse because the production just doesn't hold up to it. I keep listening to this, and I'm going back to Sean's comment of, like, what in the Fisher Price is this? Like, these are cheap ass,
Ace on Too Real. it's like straight Fisher Price. Like, it's just so bad the way the production sounds and everything. I'm like, god damn. I got rich like I won't shoot at them. I'm on the block, still fuck a broke nigga, bitch, bro, I don't give a shit. Ice so cold, I make her sick. Know who my dentist is. I done shot so many men. I think I'm 50 Cent. I ask once, won't ask again. Know who you dealing with. If I crack once, won't crack again. Ain't with that feeling shit. Man, these niggas hoes. Like, we have Snob, other records that are really good this year already from trap artists. Even fucking YB's record is a bajillion times better than this, and that's saying something.
There's so much that trap producers can, like, branch out and get inspired from. Yeah. There's so many things that haven't been done, which is why it's frustrating. It's just very clearly these guys aren't listening to any other music other than what's playing on the radio, which is depressing. Because, like, you're musicians. You're supposed to be like, oh, okay, like, whatever. Whatever's played in the streets is whatever's played in the streets. But you're supposed to, like, be several steps ahead of that and then bring that
game back. You're
supposed
to be the one making the music for the streets, you know? You're not supposed to be chasing it.
Yeah. And so that was just, like, the whole thing. I gave it the one college try where, like, I listened to the full thing. Yeah. But, like, even I couldn't do the second listen because I was like, this is a waste of my time. I would rather dig into album one or a little bit of album three than album two this week, honestly. But I think I'll just have to say it again. I hate all these posthumous records. Anderson .Paak is so right. Unfortunately, when these artists die, that means... That may have to mean, like, okay, what we got is what we got. We're just going to have to, like, hold on to that and live with it.
Yeah, seriously, 100%. We can't have these posthumous records. The only consideration I'll give it to people is if they literally have the album done and it's just being mixed or whatnot, that's okay. But something, you know, years removed where they have really not much say on what was done, it's just awful. And you could see the effects of that on this record.
Because on the one hand, maybe King Von or, like, you know, whoever, it's not like maybe King Von would have said, no, all these beats are trash, make them better. It's not like he would have been the person to do that, but it feels worse when you drop the ball on your dead friend's album.
Yeah.
That's us. Like, it's weird. That's not a music critique, but I'm always going to hate albums more when they're posthumous records that don't do justice to the artist. So, like, yeah. This is my equivalent of, like, a Michael Brooks or maybe even like a Needle Drop, just bad. It's just no. I just don't care.
Pet Federation, this is the Worm Federation.
this is the Snail League.
Snail League, Gary the Snail League. Is that the Olympics they had in SpongeBob where if the Gary barely the Rock beat Gary?
Jesus Christ, yeah. God, trap is more in the state of music conversation because I've got that can be going a tank. Okay, we've got a little mini Snoop Dogg corner here, so let's run into that.
Yeah, so Snoop Doggy Dogs, this is very interesting actually. So him acquiring Death Row Records, so since he acquired it, both of Tupac's Death Row Records, they're no longer going to be on the label anymore.
Yoink.
Damn, just straight up pulled it out. So yeah. All Eyes on Me and the Don Kulumiyanti, I can never say
Kulumiyanti.
Kulumiyanti, I can never say that fucking album name ever. The 7 Day Theory. They're no longer on the record, which is insane because, you know, they got beef from back in the 90s.
Also, Dr. Dre is
with no anorexic rocker, with no anorexic rapper. Well, fuck Dre, so I can understand that. But yeah, I guess it's, but yeah, Dr. Dre.
Apple Music's gonna own that
one. It's slated to leave, right? It's supposed to leave as early as next year. So
yeah. So those are three hits that Death Row Records won't have. And naturally, Death Row having the goddamn Snoop Dogs. Jerry curl ass or straight hair ass back then. Looking at this photo of him in Tupac, but what I'm trying to say is naturally the play of Snoop Dogg owning Death Row Records here is that, you know, as we had with Bob Dylan, when you own these really historical, often played records, we talked about in a recent episode of Audio Face this year, most of the music streaming is of songs made from before the year 2000. Like, most of it's old stuff. And so that's where a lot of the money gets made. If you keep, if you own the rights to that music, that's where you can make a lot of bank. What's funny?
Exactly. You know, on the drive folder. I just saw that. Oh. That was funny.
Oh, yeah. Editing. Okay. Anyways. We also see Snoop Dogg is facing. Go ahead.
Here's the legal lawsuit. Corner. Yeah, he's here's the Snoop legal corner. So yeah, he's facing a potential lawsuit from an Uber Eats driver.
Because Snoop took to his Instagram story last month to complain about an Uber driver who failed to deliver his order. The driver who, oh, nice job, consequence, different font. I see what got copy-pasted. The driver said the rapper's neighborhood was, quote, not a safe place. But the driver is now suing Snoop.
Pulled to the gate.
Yeah. First of all, Snoop's good.
Like, this is fucking funny.
But like, Snoop was apparently, his order was delivered to an area of Inglewood, California, where Snoop resides or whatever. And like, listen, if it's Snoop Dogg, like, the order will work out. But yeah, the Uber driver is now suing, saying that Snoop Dogg put all of his personal information, first name, photo, license plate number on blast. So, you know, that's going to have to be a case. Might end up being settled, but you know.
Probably is.
That's just one of those dumb cases. We've actually gotten a lot of interesting points where these like artists, maybe it was like, I don't know if it was Lizzo, but I want to say like there was another artist who got into an argument with like an Uber Eats driver or something, and they got into a thing. But
yeah, there's been something like that, you know. And then one was in an actual Uber too.
Could just go pick up the damn food yourself. Also, y'all are rich as fuck. Y'all can just have one of your people pick up the food. Like,
exactly, that's what I'm saying. Or have one of your chefs just make the food.
Yeah, like, I'm not going to tell rich people how to live, but if I were, I'd say give away 90% of your money.
Anyways. Fair play. Next album review, we got Refresh, but all lower caps, by Chanel Tress. It is 7 songs, 35 minutes long. The anti-Sean, where it's every single song is lowercased, which, you know, I think it's better than all uppercased, so I'll allow it.
Dan published the album.
Dan published the album. We reviewed Chanel Tress. You know, we've talked about him multiple times on this podcast. You know, we really admire a lot of his work. And
we love our Chanel Tress, don't we, folks?
Yeah, we really do. And this album is another thing that, this is my favorite project that he's done by far.
So, let me just say, the most jarring thing here is that Chanel Tress's characteristic milky undertones are nowhere to be found in this entire album.
No,
this is all
exactly.
Instrumentals, true to form, back to basics, sort of like lightly experimental house constructions.
Yeah, it's totally a pivot for him, but in a good direction, I guess.
I think it's a safe pivot, because like Chanel Tress is very inspired by all these things. He's just usually making beats, as is lately, has been making beats with other folks and then layering his voice over it.
Yeah, exactly.
But like I feel like house music is very much his home. 100%. It's just like more of him focusing in on that and then removing his voice, which one criticism I did have is that, okay, you've got a voice, you can use it, but it's a little bit monotone, and there's only so much it can do with it. And I feel like if I had heard his voice in a 36-minute album, that would have been my complaint. So I like that he just goes, I'm just going to do instrumentals for this. Let's see what happens.
And they're good instrumentals. I think they're very good. I mean, they're understated because it's like tried and true house. So you know me, I have a soft spot for it, so I can bump this shit all day long. I really, really can. But going into the album, the first track, Over and Over, when I listened to it, I was like, there's no vocals in here. I was like, I was not expecting that for an opening track. songs in, I'm like, there's still no vocals. Okay, I guess we're running with it. Really wasn't, I just wasn't expecting that. And like the first track is like a nice like tropical house almost in the way it's done, and it's a good solid beat. Really like it. It sucks you into the record of what you want, you know, and gets you an idea of what it's gonna sound like and whatnot into it as well. And it's pretty good with how it sounds. So and then second track, Willow, really like it. It's definitely more understated compared to Over and Over, but I do really like the drum beat a lot. I love the muted drums and the muted keyboard kind of in the background as well. I guess that might be my only complaint of the record, is it is a little bland in the way it's produced. And some of the keyboard beats can feel a little off with how they're done, but overall, I really like it. Especially because of like hearing so much Channel Trust from before, you know what he can do. So it's nice for him to pivot a little bit and really hone into making beats and whatnot. So now what I want after this record is, okay, I want you to take the best stuff from what you've done before, which is obviously your vocal range and not doing that, on top of beats that you make, instead of really partnering up with people and doing that. And then see what you can do from there and experiment and branch out a little bit. Like, we have this house sound that I adore, that is very good. But what can you do with more when you have that? And you get some interesting ideas that you get throughout this record too as well. Like, example, Reasons, the second track, like you get a little bit more like fun experimental house with that. And it's stuff that I really like. This is like your solid European underground. It reminds me a little bit of some Radio No Regular Play from the early 2010s. It's a palette as well. So.
Yeah, when we got to like real Dan old rave, like techno callback hours was Antigua, which is definitely my pick for like favorite song. Yep. Track. This just goes back to like my foundational, it goes back to like my foundational like music forming of like this like techno house inspired stuff, right? Like,
yeah,
I dig it so much.
And then
it's callback to progressive house as well, which we only talked about very early on in the podcast when we're still doing like a ton of Deadmau5 productions and Deadmau5 releases, but. Yep. No, I really love to hear something like that done in a fresh kind of 2020s feeling way. I've always said that Channel Trace's music, whether he's featured on or producing with it, always sounds like the kind of music they play at stores they want you to shop and spend a lot of money at. Like, it's very like high paced, sort of like runway feeling stuff. Yeah. You would hear at like a Topshop or an H&M. Not as like a pejorative way, but it's like it's runway music. Like it's
yep.
Like high fashion, like trendy, like thoughtful production, but thought to be sort of like this like upper echelon inspired kind of deal. And I think you get that here, but with really thoughtful production, which I appreciate
for sure. Like, and then skipping to the last track, because you get my favorite, which is a straight up runway track, which is Prada. Fucking love it so much. It's that like solid 2000s house that I grew up listening to and grew up really
2000s.
What?
I thought you just said 2000s. Oh,
I know. That's your 2000s. It's like saying 2004. Like, it just sounds weird.
I hear boomers doing that. So
I hear people do that sometimes. Yeah, and back in 2004, I'm like, what? You good?
That was 2004, you Berenstain Bears piece of shit. You know it, I know it, everybody knows it. It was 2004.
It was 04 if you want to shorten it, god damn it. But not 2004, it don't work like that.
But sang anyway. Along if you know the words.
La, 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 la.
Anyways.
It ends it very well. Prada ends it very well with how it sounds, and it's that tried and true house beat that I really, really like. So, and then my biggest thing I like about it is it's short for being like a house record. Like, it's hard to make a house record long without it, like, it dragging on a little bit within this, but every track is different, but it all still flows together. You can mix these things and shuffle the record and it still flows together, which is, you know, something to be said that is good, but each track is still unique in its own way. So you're not going to get the same beat, recycled beat over and over again, which sometimes can plague some house records and whatnot. But overall, for what it is, it's short, but it gets to the point. And for all the beats that he's did, there's a lot of things that he can go off of with this. You know, he could take and run. You know, example, if you go to Antigua, like, there's a lot of different sounds in Antigua that you could take and just run and do so much with. So
totally.
Like, yeah, overall, I really like it.
Would be nice if we lived in the kind of music ecosystem where trap artists thought to take some of these beats and flip them and make better songs.
Oh, man, you could do
would
so
be
much.
Nice.
Yep.
We were still a little bit upset from our reviews of recent trap music, so give us a break there. Anyways, yep. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audioface because our review is our review and what we said in it makes the most sense, but if you want something that doesn't make sense, we'll give you a ranking system that's either numbered or lettered or involves international pet federations. So
these are international pet federations. So this is the international dog competitions, like the New York dog shows and stuff, whatever federation that is, whatever that's considered, whatever the FIA equivalent of the fucking pet the dog shows, that's what I want.
This is bison.
Bison?
This is bison. I want a bison federation. This is maybe I am thinking too much about current events, but I just want something that's strong like ox, you know? This album represents strong like ox.
Maybe they're on Catalina hiding from the white folks.
Right. And not even on your continent, because bison are largely native to North America. Anyways, quick hits. And this one I thought was interesting. I think a couple of other different companies have played around with this kind of thing, but as concerts are coming back up again, it feels like, because it was almost 2 years ago to the weekend where we were talking about concerts being canceled and closing down because of COVID-19. Well, now, even though COVID-19 still very much exists, the concerts are back. And Live Nation is offering something called a lawn pass, which gets you access to any sold out concert at certain venues around the country. So the way this works is you buy a Live Nation lawn pass for a certain venue. Let's say the Concord Pavilion in Concord, California, which is a participating venue. Then the benefit to that is if you have a sold out show and some artist happens to be coming there, say the Black Keys or Tears for Fears or Snoop Dogg or Halsey or Foo Fighters or what have you, you can go to that show even though it's sold out if it's at that venue you have the pass for.
That's really cool. I like that.
Yeah,
I think it's an interesting way to bypass some people having issues to get into shows.
Yeah,
and having
I
to
think
spend like an absorbent amount of fee on some upcharge tickets and whatnot for it. So
yeah, so there were limited amounts of these tickets because obviously they're like overselling. So, but
not
I
true.
Think they're reasonably priced because they're $200 for these passes.
Only $200?
Yeah. So,
wow.
Like, you know, old Dan, before I changed, would have bought like two of these passes and just like had them like for free if I ever wanted to like take a person or like someone
yeah,
I'm dating.
Exactly.
And it's like, hey, let's just like have these like on hold real quick.
Yep.
Yeah. But, I think it's a really interesting idea. And to buttress a future podcast episode or series of videos that we're going to be doing or releasing on the Audioface YouTube channel, as well as for podcast guests and for Syndicate 23 members first, podcast guests, that's a weird one, but you know, podcast listeners, is in the state of music, people are very, what's the word, horny for concerts to come back. They really want concerts to come back. And these labels and the people who put on events, Live Nation, known for putting on incredibly safe events at all times, because, you know, they're being sued in the Travis Scott situation. But they're looking for more ways to get as many people as possible to these concerts to make them as sold out as possible to make up for the 2 years in lost revenue that they all have. Because all these places are hurting and people want to get back to listening to live music, but also the economy that supports not just only live musicians, but the roadies, the staff, the crew, the every person who makes that stuff work for all of us to enjoy. This is their sustaining force as well. So there's all these different things out there to help make it so people can go to concerts easier and enjoy concerts more easily. It's mostly incentivized to make money first and foremost, but this is good because it's going to address something that I think you were talking about earlier, Sean, which is it's hard to get into concerts now because of competing for bots against shit. But this should provide some sort of, you know, backup for people. Absolutely. Yeah. So, this has been Audioface.
This has been Audioface. Thank you for listening to Audioface Podcast. I am your host, Sean, along with Dan. You can follow the podcast at Audioface Pod on all socials if you would like. You can go to the YouTubes at youtube.com/AudioFacePod to see all of our clips daily. You can follow me at SW Suarez, if I trust you, on social media. So you can follow Dan at Dan from the web on Twitter and Dan from the internet on Instagram, whether he trusts you or not. This has been Audioface 222, and thank you for listening.
Cheers.
Try my best NPR voice. Bye.
Yeah.